I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Eddie Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, Danny Kelly joined us as always. And we took a look at all the Premier League games this weekend. What else did we do today? Oh, we had some clips of the week. Pewter from 2004.
Yeah, fun.
Took you back. We had a bit of a chat, didn't we?
We did. We talked a little bit about the North London Derby, of course.
Yeah, you got in touch. You had some humourable material for us in the worlds of cricket and fashion. So I think that should do. You hear it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, Paul. Come on, have your say.
Because Danny's going to come on and we'll probably be repeating ourselves. But, Arsenal played very, very well yesterday. Great performance by them.
That's depressing, isn't it?
Yeah. I wasn't surprised they were a very good team. I did sit here on Friday say whatever Tottenham do in that game, they'll probably do it from a position of being 2-0 down. And it wasn't a massive surprise. I think it didn't make me a sage. I think a lot of Tottenham fans would have seen the very familiar pattern, this slavish adherence to picking a system when you haven't really got the players to play. It was a game crying out for three in midfield from Tottenham's point of view to essentially match up with Arsenal, not in terms of the confidence of those midfield players, but in the numbers. And sure enough, we played the same old system we always play and got our backsides kicked. I mean, I don't quite buy into the idea that they were so much better in the second half. They were allowed to be better in the second half. We've seen it in a lot of games with Tottenham. When you're 2-0 down, obviously, if you're the visiting side, you're going to drop deeper. You're going to let the other team have some of the ball and think you can maybe nick one on the break, which through Nketiah they nearly did. Yeah, Tottenham had shots and there was a bit more about them second half. But Arsenal didn't need to get on the front foot. Had they needed to, they probably proved in the first half they could have done. So it's not enough to be giving good sides, as we showed against Newcastle, two goal starts. You can't do it. The thing about Conte that drives me crazy is he doesn't change it. We're all there at half time and people are saying, I saw Tom Rennie, who occasionally pops on the station with us, he was working there. He said, what do you think? I said, nothing will happen. He won't change anything to about 65, 70 minutes. Richarlison was gagging to get on. He kept looking at the bench, kept saying, give me 20 minutes, which they finally did. But, it was another very frustrating day. And, you know, Arsenal were a great side. They're great to watch. I was very impressed with Zinchenko. And obviously, a tale of two keepers, as you were saying. We've got one that frightens the life out of us as fans, and I'm guessing defenders now, that's always likely to throw one in. Two home games in a row where he's given pretty key goals away. And
I think that's key, that goals change games.
Yeah, they do.
Son, he had a great chance at 1-0. Yeah. 1-1. If Spurs had scored, the stadium would have come alive. Could have been a different game.
Ramsdale saves it. There's two big saves. I mean, most of the ones, quite a lot of them you'd expect him to make, but the one from Sonny with his legs and the one from Sessegnon with his legs are huge saves. You know, with 10 minutes, Arsenal hadn't got themselves going second half because, again, they hadn't needed to. Tottenham scored with 6-7 minutes left. It could have been slightly different. They could have somehow nicked a point, although they wouldn't have deserved it. And also, that nonsense that went on at the end, this nitwit, they're going to find him and I'm sure they'll ban him for life.
He's going to get
and he's probably going to end up, well, much more than that. I would imagine he'll be prosecuted because that was assault. You've got to take your beating, not just as fans, because it was interesting. Ramsdale said, I was having a little bit of banter, effectively, with some fans behind the goal and I gave a bit back at the end. And they said they took, he said practically all of them took it in a sportsmanlike way, because that's the way it is. You give it and you take it. And then at the end, we used to see Wrighty do it. Thierry Henry used to do it. Tottenham players have done it. Rafa van der Vaart, we scored a goal, went right behind the goal, shushing the crowd. So all players do that to opposing fans. Mm. So you've got to take your beating. And again, Richarlison, he's just come back and he's putting his hand in, and he's taking the moral high ground about winding up the crowd. You would bet your life, if we'd won 2-0 at the Emirates, he would have been right in front of their fans, of kissing course. The badge and giving it to them. So
absolutely. That's a bit like
take your beating and feed off it, which is what teams should do.
It was a bit like yesterday, Palace. You know, they wasted a lot of time until Chelsea scored. And then after they were complaining about time wasting with Chelsea, you think, well, come on, you can't have it both ways. It was very funny, though, yesterday. Chelsea, a lot of people are concerned about their buying policy. A lot of the journalists have pointed out, you know, that
we'll
it's
have a
very,
talk about
very
that,
scattergun and all this.
It is.
But I got a big laugh when I shouted, put your chequebook away, bowling.
First time it's ever been, shouted at a chairman. Oi, put your chequebook away. What's the matter with you?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Time then to look back over the Premier League weekend. We will cover all games this weekend in the company, as always, of Danny Kelly. We do that, of course, with our good friends at Car Finance 24/7. Hi, Danny.
I can't hear Danny.
Oh,
is it me?
We lost Danny.
I know I'm deaf in one ear, but that's
no. Bad. I can't hear Danny. He's there. He is there. Hello, Danny.
Hello there. How are you?
Oh, we've got you. Yeah. We've marvellous. Got you. Marvellous.
Somebody put their elbow on a button there. You know
I think they probably did. Well, I've had a brief say. I could do an hour on it, but I won't because it'll bore everybody. But you have the great pleasure of having your own podcast to do that on, to vent. I don't. I have a very small window. But we are going to start at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for the North London Derby. As I said, feel free, Danny, off your long run. What do you make of it?
Paul, you say I'm lucky enough to have the podcast, and bless it, I've just done it. But I've also got two shows, including this one, on Talk Sport today. So last night I was thinking, hang on, you've got to talk about this defeat on three separate platforms today. first of all, let me express my disappointment. I haven't been bought by Chelsea yet. Seems unbelievable.
Give it time.
I'm only
20 past one.
I'm still on the market for being bought by Todd Bowley. Paul, look, I listened, of course, to what you said in the first 10 minutes there, and all of it is true. The problem, and I'm going to give you a problem and a solution, or at least a ray of hope. The problem for Spurs at the moment is that last night, before, in preparation for this, for kickoff tonight, for the podcast I do, I started to write down Spurs' problems, from tiny personnel problems to strategic problems. I got into the mid-30s and I stopped for my own mental health.
Oh dear.
I said, no way, I'm not going to do this anymore. But look at Arsenal, look at Manchester United, look at Napoli. I could give you four more examples. Look at how quickly things can be turned around. If everybody at a football club pulls in the same direction, if the manager who is appointed wants to be there and has bought into the horrible word, the project. If the players are inspired by the manager, these things are all solvable. I mean, otherwise, Paul, you've known me long enough to know there was a spell in the late 80s where I stopped going to Spurs for 3 years because it was driving me mad. Now, I genuinely believe, as you say, you've got to take victory and defeat in the same spirit. The sun always rises. For the supporters of the losing club, the sun comes up the next day. But Spurs have got a lot of problems there, and all of it revolves around the manager, who is part-time, a caretaker. Why would player X run through brick wall Y for a person who isn't committed to the club as they hope to be?
He's not a man for self-reflection, is he, Antonio Conte? I don't think I've ever heard him say, nor has he probably ever said, look, I'm the manager, I pick the team, I choose the tactics.
He has got a massive ego.
So the buck stops with me. I've never heard him say, I don't know what the Italian is for, the buck stops with me, but I don't think he's ever said it. He comes out, even yesterday he was, mate, a very odd press conference afterwards where he was saying, well, we banged the goalkeeper, blah, blah, blah.
I don't mind him, Paul. I don't mind him. Excuse me for jumping in. I don't mind him backing the goalkeeper, players, public, all the rest of it. But coming out and saying that was a really good performance. A good performance. Come off it, man. Don't try and pull the wool over our eyes. We've been watching the game too long. We pay too much to watch the game for to be fed literally nonsense and be expected to lap it up like some kind of pet. Yeah. No way.
I think Arsenal, though, they are excellent. There's no question about that, as much as it irritates me to say it. It's terrible. Some of my notes are unreadable. But that's not the point. I'm just bitter. But they are a very, very good side. But I do think that it's in their favour that Liverpool and City are battle-worn. And it's very interesting to note that the three teams really doing well are three teams with impetus and momentum. That's Arsenal, Newcastle and United, with new impetus. Whereas I think those two other teams, Chelsea obviously in ridiculous transition and because of Abramovich and all that stuff, so you write them off. But, you know, that's a big difference. I mean, City just look mentally tired. Liverpool mentally tired because they've had this battle for the last 2 years between them where, you know, they've been so much better than everybody else, but they've been, you know, going at it full bore. And I think that's affected them. It means that Arsenal really have got it to themselves. You'd be amazed if they don't win the title from here.
Well, they are now favourites with the bookmakers, which is usually a good indicator. I think you're right that Manchester City in particular didn't realise what it took out of them to even try and head Liverpool off of any one of the four passes last season. And Liverpool, I mean, there's never been a season like it, has there, in terms of what they almost won, what they did win, but also the mental disappointment, particularly, I think, of the Champions League. They're human beings. They are human beings. And I mean that about Jurgen Klopp as well. And the way he's responding in press conferences, there are loads of differences, and you don't want to be doing what gets described as lazy journalism, but his press conferences are starting to be very similar, and Andy Brassell will no doubt tell you this, to his press conferences when finally the effort of keeping Dortmund on the unstoppable coattails of Bayern Munich crushed him down. He's a great manager. He's a very good man. But he looks like he's also struggling with just the endless need to keep on fighting with Manchester City.
Just before we leave the Tottenham situation, there's quite a fundamental in what you said about if everybody pulls together. You've got this difference in philosophy between they've taken on a manager who's jammed today, and it's not the way that this board works. So, you know, he would love Tottenham to sign Casemiro, a player like that, for 60 million quid, a 30-year-old. That's never going to happen. You're not going to get ready-made players. So that's quite a fundamental issue between an ownership with one approach and a manager with another. So I don't know how you square that circle,
Chelsea are a win-today club who've signed a project manager. Spurs are a project club who've signed a win-today manager. The difference is Todd Bowley did it after 2 weeks of inexperience. Levy's had 20 years to work this out.
And we're no closer to getting there.
He is a square peg in a round hole, and I wouldn't be buying players on his recommendation if he's not going to be there.
And that is the issue facing him in January. Anyway, more on that. Let's move on then. As you hear the music, that means it's time to move on, although we pushed our luck a bit there. The producer tells us. It's the music you hear in the Oscars when they want to clear the stage. Newcastle 1, Fulham 0. I was watching this most of the last half hour in the bowels of the Spurs stadium, and it was a fairly bonkers last half hour, wasn't it, Danny?
Yeah, it was. I mean, first of all, again, Newcastle showing what can be done very quickly in football. These five-year projects are a thing of the past. You're either moving forward or you're moving backwards in modern football, particularly in the competitive arena of the Premier League. But of course, again, he's my favourite non-Spurs player. In fact, this week he's my favourite player, Mitrovic. Has any player ever had a wider spectrum of performance from absolute comedy numpty to fantastic footballer? And if you said to me at the start of the week, and incidentally, what a weekend it was for the Premier League, take the North London derby out, which I can't stand. Loads of amazing football results. Everything you want. Big teams threatened with relegation. Two of them in the bottom three. Huge derbies. It was a brilliant weekend. But if you'd said to me, one player will have a goal disallowed that will be critical in the game because he'll hit the penalty twice, the right foot, then left one. I said, hang on, Mitrovic, yes? And of course it was Mitrovic. Of course, where Newcastle are going, because they're in one of those surreal runs of form that teams get into, of course they scored late on with an expensively acquired reserve forward.
I think, though, that you know, we all hope, and I'm a big fan of Howard Webb, and I think he's done a great job in America. He was a great ref, but I hope it does improve, because so far, I just don't get how they couldn't give the penalty for the first one. It was a penalty. What is wrong with
Dan Burns?
What are they looking at? Yeah. Dan Burns, lucky, gets away with a lot of those. And that was a penalty. You know, they should have had two penalties. So although Newcastle had all the chances and probably deserved to win the game, Fulham can feel a bit hard done by.
Yeah, there's no deserve in football, is it? It's what you get.
And, yeah, I suppose that's true.
I'm glad you mentioned Howard Webb there, because his reputation is huge. Obviously, the problems are big as well, because you've got entrenched interests now, In protecting the referees from the mistakes of VAR and protecting VAR from the mistakes of the referees. They're not going to go back. They're not going to go back to ground zero with it and say it's actually been a failed experiment, which is what it is. Mm. So Howard Webb is going to have to somehow, like Frankenstein, of course the scientist, not the monster, is going to have to somehow stitch together bits and pieces of this mess that he's inherited to try and improve the product for the players and us, the spectators. You know, you mentioned that penalty, which was obvious, the Rashford thing, which was a disgrace. Howard has... I don't know what he's going to do. I think he may just have to lay the law down and say, we are not... Whatever IFAB say, whatever FIFA say, we are not going to give ridiculous decisions, and we are not going to give letter of the law offside, which any person with a brain in their head could see is wrong.
Yeah,
now, how you implement that, I don't know, but that's why he's getting paid the big bucks.
That's true. Just as a PS to that, you know, it's very interesting, the women's game, the Chelsea-Arsenal game, Emma Hayes calling for VAR after the game, and even Leanne, I was listening to our commentary on the way, Leanne Sanderson calling for it, because it's a... Of course they can't, because it can't be in every ground, but, you know, it's a difficult one. So you get a decision like that, which Arsenal get a penalty for one that was outside the box. You know, and people go, where's the VAR in women's football?
Yeah, so you've got, and it's the same whenever somebody gets sawn off in the Championship. We need to have VAR. So when you've got it, you don't really want it. When you haven't got it, you want it.
That's
so
about it.
More on that shortly.
Well, the difference, Paul, very quickly, yeah. I hear the music. The difference is those of us who experience VAR know now that this world is slightly better without it.
No, absolutely very true. Right. The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Chelsea 1, Crystal Palace 0. Andy, you witnessed this one, of course.
Unlike Todd Bowley, we don't need to spend too much on this game. This week we are mostly keeping Potter. A nice tribute to Luca Vialli, which was lovely.
Yeah, good.
Mudrick didn't look at all happy.
Yeah, well, it's because he thought he was going
to my agent.
Thought he was going to Arsenal.
What am I doing?
Chelsea, you say, Stamford Bridge. You seem to be much closer to the West End than I imagined.
It's so bad. And Cucurella, I mean, how bad must he be that when Hall, who had a decent game, but not, he's still learning, he's a kid, but, you know, more progressive than Cucurella. When he got cramp and he had to come off, he brought on Koulibaly. How bad is
that? At left back. Wow.
Yeah. So that says everything. I mean,
yeah, and that's
earth.
Potter, who can get a game out of him.
Yeah,
he's proved
I don't know what's
it.
Happened
it's
to
very
him.
Strange.
He's about a third of the player he was last
and he's
year.
Worked out, Danny, that Chelsea have either a couple of them on loan and one of them to come in. 12 players for the three forward positions.
Yeah.
12
players.
Somebody on Twitter has done the exercise. Chelsea have 41 players under contract who have played for the first team.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Extraordinary. I mean, you know, it is an amazing football club, but my disappointment not being signed by them in the last couple of hours is doubled by the fact that, Andy, you absolutely promised us last week they wouldn't win another game this season.
Yeah, well, I didn't think they would.
You
they
promised
really,
it.
It didn't really look like it, did it?
Well, Kepa was doing his best to keep you in it.
Yeah,
to prove you wrong, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, look, it could have easily been a draw. Palace were a little bit unlucky, no question.
What do you make of Palace, Andy?
Yeah, you know, like a lot of teams, they're a bit like, you know, it was a sort of real mid-table battle, really. But I personally, look, I've written this season off, and there's no question it is a transition. What happened to Chelsea? It was a massive thing to lose the owner and to lose the people. And Bowley, you know, he's made mistakes. He's clearly made mistakes. He clearly shouldn't have been the director of football. He's clearly bought players he shouldn't have bought.
Yeah.
And it's going to take time to sort it out. And, you know, hopefully, and the biggest thing they need to do is sort out a medical department that actually keeps the players on the pitch.
Danny, if you're aware of this, Andy was telling me earlier on that the medical department apparently are people that Todd Bowley knew from his music business days, and they work with rock bands mainly.
A lot of repetitive strain injuries
for drummers.
I know Dave Grohl's out for the season, but
Dave Grohl hopes to come back for the last few games.
That's mostly extreme hangover cures, isn't it? If you're the doctor of a rock band.
Probably is.
That is weird.
I mean, my final word, if you've got 11 first-team injuries, you need to look at what's going on, either with pitches, either with training, either whatever. It's not right.
Yeah, it's pushing all those flight cases around. That's what the problem is. They're putting up those lighting rigs.
Do you think that Mudrick's slightly discontented face was because he still got some pain from his Arsenal tattoo healing?
Yeah, of course. I mean, absolutely.
Long sleeve or short sleeve, Mikhailo? Or definitely long sleeve.
Why buy something you don't need?
Yeah.
know, that's the point. Why buy something that you don't need?
Massive cannon on his right arm. Yeah, exactly. What a lovely idea.
Well, you know, when you're actually desperate for a central midfielder like Fernandes, you know, somebody like that, which would make much more sense. But, you know, all these long contracts, it's all about financial fair play, isn't it?
And 8.5 years. Imagine that. Nice 8.5 year contract, boys. Anyway, we move on. Brentford 2, Bournemouth 0. And this also featured another bit of crackpot officialdom, of course.
It made me angry, even though it was for Brentford. I just think, what is wrong with these people? Can you not? It's like you've never seen a game of football. If you thought that was a penalty with Ivan Toney, it's like you've never watched football before
in
your life.
6-1, half a dozen clearly of the other.
Clearly hooked his arm. Clearly brought him down. Clearly it wasn't a penalty. I don't know what they're thinking.
Well, you know, it's a wrestling move. I mean, of course, you all know that I'm an expert on judo as well. It's a wrestling move that forwards have learned to do, and the referees normally, with their palm up facing towards the sky, tell them to get up and get on with the game. When he gave it, I mean, it was bewildering to me. How can you, as you say, how can you be around football all your adult life and see that as a penalty? Having said that, of course, it's a very form result, isn't it? Because I applied to Bournemouth what is now officially known at Company's House, the Danny Kelly relegation litmus test, which is if their players were prepared to go to another club at the end of the season, how many Bournemouth players would be bought by a club in the bottom half of the Premier League? And the answer is none.
I think Solanke's looked quite good. I've got a lot of time for him, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, I think they're a squad that does not inspire confidence that you're going to stay in the Premier League. And we know that the manager had his moment in the sun. I don't want to criticise him because I think it's just not a quality enough football squad to stay in that league.
No, I agree.
The importance, some interesting stats, the importance of Ivan Toney to Brentford. And let's be honest, they could be facing a bit of time without him. He's been directly involved in 33 goals in 50 Premier League appearances for Brentford, 25 goals, 8 assists, the most by an English player in their first 50 top flight games. He's going to be tough to replace, isn't he?
You know, with what's hanging over him, we know about that. And you know, otherwise, I would have said, you know, Chelsea would have been much better buying him than Mudryk. That's what they need.
Probably not at the moment until things are sorted out.
West Ham.
We move on to Wolves 1. West Ham 0. And not happy times at Upton Park. They'd probably be a lot happier at Upton Park. At the London Stadium. Mate Tom Rennie, West Ham fan, he says that last 38 games in the Premier League, 11 wins, 21 losses, 6 draws, 39 points in 38 games. Fulham, the only team in the top half beaten in that time. Two of the wins are against Norwich. Relegation form, relegation football, played on a huge budget, he says. It doesn't make great reading from David Moyes' point of view.
You can't add much to that because it all makes perfect sense. If you open your window now, I know it's quite chilly today, you will hear the alarm bells ringing in East London because that result against a team who, you know, they've appointed a proper manager now and they're on an upward curve. But you've got to be honest, haven't we? At the start of the season, I proclaimed, as I said to you before on here, this is the best squad of players West Ham have ever had. So what is going on there?
Similar thing to City and Liverpool, though, I think. They've had two very long, very hard seasons, West Ham, where they've performed above expectations and they just look mentally... Again, that
but
sort of thing.
One way you get around that is by freshening up the squad, and they've done that. They've spent quite a lot of money.
Freshening up the manager.
Based on what they did last year, you wouldn't have sacked the manager at the start of the season, probably. They backed him, as you'd imagine, because they got the semi final of a European competition. So, but it's not happening, is it?
I mean, and it's human nature, isn't it? Things didn't start well in the season. So as a human being, David Moyes has fallen back on the things he knows, which means you don't play the players that you've brought into freshen up the squad. Scamacca sits there on the substitute bench. It's a pattern you see with teams where, you know, it's not David Moyes' fault, but in the end, the only solution will be to change the leader of the group. Because you can't change the group. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's truth, isn't it? You can't change the group.
I did like this, though, the least surprising stat of the week. Portuguese players have now scored 10 of Wolves' 12 Premier League goals this season.
Get out of
town.
Who are the other two, for goodness sake?
They've really let the side down, haven't they?
And I love Adama Traore in his usual January shop window role. Available now.
Yeah, that's right. Barcelona, why aren't you going again? Give it another try. It might be different this time. We move on to Forest 2, Leicester 0. And fair play to Steve Cooper. especially as you said, at home, they are doing rather well. Good performance by them at the weekend. And they're sort of pulling clear. It's hard to believe here we are. What are they, 5 points outside the bottom three now? 13th, the heavy heights are 13th. And
Gibbs White, what a tremendous performance. Yeah. What a wonderful
Brennan Johnson looking the part as well.
Fabulous. And he's got to come into Gareth thinking, I think, Gibbs White. He's a really top player.
Well, again, you know, they had that mad transfer window in the summer. But if you employ the Danny Kelly relegation litmus test, there are loads of players there who would be in Premier League squads should, say, Nottingham Forest get dissolved into thin air for whatever reason, or relegated. And Steve Cooper is a bright man who, you know, eventually he's got to find a combination of those players, and he seems to have done that now. And people saying, oh, well, they're getting good results at home. That's all you need to do to stay up. You need to win about half of your home games, and you'll gather up the points to stay up.
Yeah, that's
and they're
really
looking
true.
Much more like it. Leicester, of course, I'm going to use a word that I don't usually use in relation to football. They're becalmed, aren't they? As a club, they're becalmed. There's nothing wrong with them. I don't suppose they're going to get relegated, but they appear to me to be in a state of almost stasis. They just can't move forward. Mm. Perhaps from their great achievements of the past, maybe the owners no longer... We know that they suffered terribly during the pandemic because they make their money out of airports. But there just seems to be an absolute state of inertia there. And I wonder how long... No manager ever leaves a job voluntarily these days, but Brendan Rodgers, given all that he's achieved in the game, must be thinking, what am I doing here?
Because he could do better. He might be good nowhere. For Tottenham, actually.
And Crexton,
can I just say, no Madison, no Leicester.
No,
he's there, Reece James. Yeah, the stats team to have up. These key players. And without him, because they had that lovely little run before the World Cup came. Yeah. And then without him since then, they've
And cracks Danny appearing in that relationship, that brilliant relationship between the fans and the ownership. I mean, the sort of tragedy around the death of the owner, his son taking over. But couple of banners in the crowd the other day, and you'd hate that to go toxic, but the worse it gets, that's likely.
I don't know a lot of Leicester fans, but they're starting to get not angry and toxic particularly, but they are impatient now, sad I guess is the word I'd use, about they'll always have that triumph. I mean, and it'll echo down.
And they won the FA
history.
Cup as well. Leicester had chances in that game to go one up, but they didn't take them.
No, yeah. Harvey Barnes, two great chances, wasn't it?
Well, he's a really fine player, Barnes, isn't he?
They didn't take his, and Johnson took his.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Still four games to look at from the Premier League this weekend with Danny Kelly. We move on to Everton 1, Southampton 2, yes. And now that was a toxic atmosphere at Goodison after another defeat. The big shot for me, the big takeaway for me, Dan, as a Tottenham fan, I'm sure you felt the same way, was to see a direct free kick used as a weapon against the opposition, not an excuse to hit either an opposition player in the face or the bloke sitting in row Z behind the goal. I've never... What are these direct free kicks of which
you're
speak?
You're talking about...
He's a master. He's an absolute master.
He is.
He's the Janinho, the Leon Janinho of this. And to be fair, he's also, for James Maddison, read James Ward Prowse, because Southampton I mean, they've struggled for several seasons now, but while they've got him, they've got every chance. A really, really good player. And yes, direct free kicks. It isn't just Spurs, though. It's kind of a lost art, Paul. Ever since people started putting in the old draft excluder, I think it's driven the forward players mad now. They just think it's a comedy or something. Mm. But you don't see them very, very often. But he is really good at them, James Ward-Prowse. But the Everton thing, I mean, a third of a million pounds spent. And you look at this, the side they put out, where are they going to score goals from? And then you look at the bench and you think, where's all that money gone? What is that squad?
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
They went 1-0 up, they had chances. But I do think, I was looking at Pickford and thinking he'll be playing somewhere else next season. I might say the same thing about James Ward-Prowse as well.
Yeah. The problem is that Everton would like to bring in a couple of players, and it must be difficult when, you know, those viral clips of Yerry Mina getting out of his car and others being chased down the road.
Oh, yeah, that's going to
If you're a player and you're thinking, oh, do I fancy that at the moment? Are there any other options? Mm. And, you know, it's difficult. It's going to be a difficult sell for Frank Lampard to try and bring people in.
That's what they should tell Mudrick. You could have gone to Everton, mate. That looks so miserable.
Yeah, cheer up.
But I think, again, Anthony Gordon, I mean, what a stupid free kick to give away when you've got Ward-Prowse in the opposition. It was really a daft challenge.
Yeah, it was. It was a dumb challenge, and it's very difficult to sort of try and see a way through that at the moment.
It's a
complete mess with a ball keeping away from games. It's pretty desperate. As was, of course, from Liverpool's point of view, not a great weekend for the Merseyside Giants. Brighton 3, Liverpool 0, and not a massive surprise. You looked at that before the game, the scoreline maybe, but not the outcome, Danny. I think most of us were feeling, yeah, Brighton can definitely get something out of that at the moment, the way they're playing at home.
It is funny, isn't it, the way a team that was so fantastic the last couple of years, it's not unravelling, but it's starting to look its age and all the rest of it. And I mean that in terms of games played, as Andy was saying, rather than the physical age of the players. And it's often odd, isn't it, that, you know, those of us who are well informed but essentially amateur pundits, you don't always know what's going on in teams. The loss of Sadio Mane,
huge.
We can see the attacking loss of it, but he also led the press. He was their press trigger. Mm. He was the one who said, whose positioning told the other 10 players, are we going to fall back and defend our halfway line, or are we going to press these? And remember the Gagan pressing and all the rest of it. For a person who is not almost the inventor of this way of playing, Klopp has lost his leader on the pitch in that department. And people criticise Liverpool's midfield, but the real victims of this are their defence now, who are often left exposed. I mean, there's no excuse for Trent Alexander-Arnold now. He's not a kid anymore. To watch him walking back after towards his own goal when the second goal went in, you've got to do better than that, my friend. But generally, I feel sorry for Liverpool's defenders now, who are caught between their very high line and no press. It's very strange watching them. And Brighton, of course, are a very good football team who, of course, are going to exploit that.
Yeah, they're more clinical under De Zerbi, aren't they? They're more attacking. They seem to take their chances better. Perhaps he'll be the new Chelsea manager.
Yeah, it won't be long. You have him by the end of the season.
They're doing very, very well. Yeah.
The worrying thing from a Liverpool point of view is that Jurgen Klopp's normally pretty spiky after a defeat, and he'll have a pop at a journalist or something. None of that. He looked slightly broken. For the first time, he looked like he didn't have any answers, really.
As I say, that behaviour is a slight echo of his latter days at Dortmund. Ask Andy about it. He'll tell you. We discussed it at length with Kevin Hatchard on Trans-Europe Express last night. Many of the problems are different. He doesn't have the problem of Bayern Munich taking all his best players. But he does have the problem that if you slip 5% in the Premier League, people come zooming past you. That's why it's such a brilliant league, because it's so cruel. You cannot afford to have a day off because people will just devour you. And Brighton, I mean, unlike the other game, you know, when Everton had their chances, there was only one win in that game. Brighton ate them alive, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't create much.
Let's move on to the Manchester derby. It's been a lot of talk about. We are going to have a chat with Mark Housey later on. We did touch on that decision earlier on that we all feel, whatever the rights and wrongs of the laws, was appalling. But purely the other big debate out of this, and you see it, you know, whisper it if you dare. Are Manchester City a better team without Erling Haaland? Well, I I think
Wrighty's analysis on Match of the Day is excellent.
I thought, I mean, the amount of runs he made and they didn't find him. I mean, clearly it's not like the guy's hiding or something. They've just got, you know, you've got a player that good, a striker that good, and it is all about putting the ball in the net ultimately, not tapping it around midfield for three quarters of an hour. So make it work. That's his job as the coach, isn't it? And those players to make sure they do the job and find him.
Yeah, he has disrupted their pattern, but he has rewarded them with you know, almost 30 goals halfway through the season. Let's not forget that. The issue seems to be away from home, where for some reason they cannot quite get the motor running. I think they've scored very, very... I mean, the last... In the middle quarter of the season that we've had so far, they've scored very few goals away from home. I thought, for what it's worth, I thought the game itself was of very high quality. Mm. Both sides moved the ball, as you'd expect with the amount of money to be spent on these players. But both sides played really, really well. And in the end, it came down to a terrible refereeing decision and the fact that City are no longer absolutely invulnerable away from home.
No, I think that's absolutely right. And you know when the opposition manager thinks it isn't a goal, you know that the rules or the laws are wrong. I mean, Ten Hag knew. He said that I'd be annoyed if that happened to us. But he would. And Darren Cairn's a brilliant linesman, and I think he was 100% right. It was interesting to see Henry Winter supporting
Although,
him today.
Darren Cairn only would have put that flag up thinking Rashford had got a touch, because he knows in law, however muddle-headed the law is, he knows in law that is technically a goal if Rashford doesn't touch it. Doesn't make it right. As the pub landlord would say, it doesn't make it right. It's just the way things are. But it's not the way they should be.
At last, Al Murray gets an appearance on this show. Yeah,
of course. Very good. Let's move on to our final game then, all the way back to Friday night.
Oh, yeah, didn't see
Aston Villa 2, Leeds 1. And I don't know if you noticed, the big takeaway from this game for me was Unai Emery's jacket.
Oh,
it had puffer sleeves.
I mentioned this last week to Andy in his role as a Carnaby Street proprietor.
So it's this same jacket, right? So
yes,
it's half
a pea coat, I think it was a car coat, and half a puffer jacket.
It is. It's got, it's got the kind of puffer sleeves you have on someone who was a falconer. Do you know? Yeah. It looks like at any point he's going to start waving a piece of meat on the touchline.
Pigeons at Villa Park.
A hawk will land on his arm.
It looks like he was in the local camping shop and they said, well, we've got these coats which look like donkey jackets, and these ones which are traditional puffer jackets. I can't make my mind up. Could you not be up one which is a combination of both? And that's what they've done.
If anybody knows who is this, a Peter Storm we see before us, if you could try and clear up who's making this well, it's like a bench coat puffer. It's a buffer.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, what is it? I don't know.
I've never heard of it.
If you can tell us who makes this fine garment, please let us know. We're all desperate to know. But yeah, it was interesting. Jesse Marsh saying he was happy with it. He thought it was one of the best performances of the season. I mean, they got a little late consolation through Bamford, but...
I watched it. I mean, they were as energetic as you would expect Leeds to be. But an Aston Villa team, and again, example to clubs who are struggling... If you get a good manager in, you can turn these things around very, very quickly. I mean, these are two roughly equivalent sides, you'd guess. Villa probably spent a few more bob. But Leeds were incredibly energetic. But already, Unai Emery has put a level of know-how into the Aston Villa team that they absorbed Leeds' energy and won the game. As simple as that. Good manager, knows what he's doing. Decent players. Tyrone Mings looks like a centre-half again now, but he was just floundering around, wasn't
That's
he?
True.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport. The TalkSport Clips of the Week.
Well, not really. They were the Clips of the Week in August 2004. This is because, as we mentioned before, we bring you Clips of the Week. Clips of the Week pewter on a Monday. We dust off some old clips from back in the day. So they're not gold, they're pewter. They're not been curated. As they went out back in August 2004, producer has pulled them all together. First time we've heard them since. So I'm sure the quality's solid. If not gold...
We thought they were good enough in 2004. Why should we change our mind now?
Maybe we've set the bar a bit higher. I don't know.
I don't think
why don't you kick us off, Andy?
We start off with breakfast show host Alan Brazil looking ahead to the rest of the programme.
Now, coming up, excuse me, in the next hour, we'll talk to Tom, or just before 9 o'clock. Frank Lampard Sr. will talk to Hank.
Yeah. Sticking with Big Alan, alongside Graham Beecroft, running us through the permutations.
Let me go through it again. The winner of each group goes through the second best second place teams, and the hosts qualify automatically. The second best second place teams are determined by the results against first, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth place teams in the same group. The other six second place teams are drawn against each other in a home and away playoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really clear that up, yeah. Go on, Beaky. Come back at him, tell him what he said. Confusing. You bet you can't. Yeah.
Let's get the news now.
The Foreign Secretary Jack Straw says the government's very sympathetic to the request. The final decision will depend on the results of a British military reconnaissance mission.
Oh, yeah. Renaissance there under Jack Straw. Back to Big Al talking about the legendary Sir Geoff Hurst.
Obviously, Sir Geoff, I don't know if he's been taken out of context, but he said, you know, this would never have happened in your day, his day with Sir Ralph.
Good Sir Ralph.
Good old Sir Ralph Ramsey. Yeah, Scooby-Doo's favourite England manager.
Staying with Alan. This time talking cricket.
Now, coming up in the next hour, Shane Warne has taken his, brilliant this is, 533rd wicket to snatch the world record from Murali.
Oh, Murali, yeah.
Murali. Oh.
Alan did eventually end up talking to Warne's legendary old cricket coach, Terry Jenner.
Yes.
But somehow I don't think he'll be joining Nasser and Ian Ward on Sky Cricket anytime soon.
In terms of coaching, Terry, you know, how do you coach someone like that? Is it with a bat? Or, you know, obviously we know him as a fantastic spin bowler, but is it, you know, do you get, does he spend a lot of time in the nets with a bat?
Why it's a bowler.
I just the idea that Terry Jenner stood over Warney with a bat, and so if he bowled badly, clapped him around the back of the head.
Anyway, I remember that clip. It's very funny. Over to racing expert Derek Tomo Thompson now.
I went to see him in the saddling boxes beforehand. He's a lovely horse. He just stood there. And when I said, are you going to win, Mr. Red, being the talking horse, his owner, who was holding him, said, yes. And it came over on TV as if the horse was doing the talking. But
yeah, I'd love
better
to
on TV
that.
Than radio, though, nick really, that. Tomo, but never mind.
Might have nicked that for TV Burt back in the day there. This is Alan and Beaky again, and say what you like about them, but above all else, they're company men.
This is the classic I have very, very, very occasionally.
Let's go back.
Else on,
let's go back to football. I don't mind a bit of classic now and again.
Yeah, normally thanks. 1 till 4 in the afternoon.
That's your favourite.
That was his. In the afternoon, I love a bit of classic. Yeah, cheers, Al. Thanks, mate.
Noted French expert Mickey Quinn, now him of the Fox Pairs, of course, using another French phrase with Andy Townsend.
He hasn't been playing terrible at all. But again, Ruud Gullit has come back and he's had a little. At the time, he regarded Shearer as a bitter noir.
A bitter what?
Bitter noir.
What's that mean?
Bad apple.
Okay.
I think it does.
a better noir there. Beautiful. Where were we?
He's the bad apple of the family.
Yes.
Yeah, go on.
Back to Alan again with some very localised and specific travel news.
If you're coming down that A12, it sounds horrendous now. Take the A120 Colchester, take that one to the M11, or if you're past that and you can't get back, get any chance of the 414, that'll take you to the M11 as well, down into London.
Alan was always good for that. Remember, he used to do his
M50
very...
M50 just past
the
Stoke.
The
A50, yeah.
Come off the M1. Get the A50 just past Stoke. And then they built the toll road, and that completely... I think he still took the A50. I think he still went that way. Anyway, what we got next?
It was a bit local, though, wasn't it, from Alan? Yes. But I'm sure he didn't labour the point any more than that.
Oh, by the way, you can come off, take the first turn off to Brentwood. I'm sure the police won't be too happy with this, and the residents of Brentwood, but come off on that first one where the petrol station is, go through up through Brentwood, and that'll take you on the M25.
I suppose it depends how quickly you're going. If Essex Police don't flag you down, they do have something of a reputation. And finally, it's another clip that's become a Christmas
really?
Eve staple.
Okay.
Oh, it's this one from... Yes, here it is.
Yeah, right.
This is Ian Collins, currently over on the Talk TV. Yes, taking a call.
Daryl is in Nelson.
Hello?
Yes, Daryl.
I was at the zoo about 2 years ago, and... amazingly, a ringtail lemur had jumped off its island across the moat.
Oh, yeah.
Landed on the fence, and I thought, I'll go over and stroke it. My wife said, no, don't go near it. It's only a little thing.
Yeah.
It grabbed hold of my arm,
yeah.
Pulled it out of its socket,
no.
And flung me into the moat. I just couldn't believe it, and then...
I'm sorry, Daryl, that's hilarious.
It weren't hilarious for me.
You were wrestled by a monkey.
Yeah.
How big's a lemur?
It's about a foot tall, I mean, I'm amazed. I'm amazed by its strength.
Pulled your arm out of its socket.
Flung me over the fence into the moat.
No way!
I'm telling you.
Really? What happened then?
I won £50,000 compensation from the zoo.
Silly record, mate.
I'm not sure about the last bit, but it's the beautiful... I was amazed by its strength. It's a beautiful delivery. There we are. You'll hear that again on Christmas Eve. No doubt. Anyway, Dusty Down from 2004 for you. Clips of the Week, Pewter, and quite an in-depth travel report.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. I'll be back with Charlie Baker tomorrow. And you return on Wednesday.
That's correct, yeah.
Got a bit of cup, football cup, soccer to look forward to. Wolves-Liverpool, isn't it?
Say, yeah.
Wolves-Liverpool after that contentious first leg, third round replay. So
yeah, it's a big game for Liverpool, though.
Certainly is, yeah, yeah. They need something from that, don't they? So if you can join us, great. From one, if not the podcast, will be available around four. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.